So I think one of the ugliest emotions is envy. It serves no one. And yet I have in my career, even since I started this business, been in that place of envy.
The future of dentistry belongs to the innovators. Welcome to Innovation in Dentistry. I'm your host, Sean Zayas, and I believe that the future of dentistry is going to be unbelievably great over the next decade and two decades. But the question isn't that. The question is, are you going to be part of what makes dentistry great? Hey guys, so today I get to be with Laura Nadler. And I could not be more excited. I love what you're doing, Laura. You just have such a uncommon zeal and uncommon energy. I've seen you live and the way you captivate the room. And I love that you and your contribution isn't clinical, because it makes me feel less uneasy, because I don't know too much about clinical dentistry. And I love dentistry. And I love the people that have been in dentistry. And you're making such a big impact. How did you even get into dentistry?
Oh, wow. That goes back more years than I would prefer to admit, but it's like 30. I was working, believe it or not, as a retail buyer. I was like buying gifts for gift stores, you know, to sell. And I was getting married, and I was tired of the schedule. Like, I'm working Christmas Eve and Sunday and things like that. So I had a kid working for me who said, hey, you know, my mom works for orthodontist, the dentist across the way is hiring, they need like an office manager. Zero knowledge of dentistry, zero knowledge of any of that. I was a linguist by education. I took the job. And through a series of events, including watching these two sweet little old men whose practice it was, not have a clue about business. Like, you know, they may have been good dentists. At that point, I really didn't know. But they just, I mean, like, you know, it was the days of paper schedule and everything. And seeing that, that wasn't uncommon, that dentists struggling for everything beyond the clinical seemed to be pretty universal. So now it became a, okay, well, what can I do better in my career with the things I'm passionate about, the skill set I have, that isn't sitting here behind a desk taking appointments in this paper book?
See, so... Sorry to interrupt, but that's what I absolutely love, because my podcast isn't about what happens and the innovations that happen as an account of someone that's an innovator. I'm fascinated about the innovator. I'm fascinated about what gets someone to say, you know what? Why not me? Why can't I stand up and lead and pioneer positive disruption when all of a sudden I see a need? And it sounds like that's exactly what happened with you. Now, I remember 100%. When I first got into dentistry, and I was like maybe 12 or 13 years old going to trade shows with my dad. So this was quite a long time ago, but I still remember talking to dentists, and maybe it's just because they understood I was young, but it felt very strong that there was like a, you're either one of us or you're not. And really quickly, they identified that I wasn't one of them. So whenever I would try to kind of see like, hey, doctor, like, you know, how's your practice or how are things going? I would just typically get the whole like, hey, everything's great, I'm crushing it. Almost like this facade of dentistry is amazing. It's making us all rich, and we're just loving it. We're not struggling. But then at the same time, I'd read in newspapers or magazines about high suicide rates. So for you in those times, I'm sure you've seen quite an evolution, but was it ever a difficulty because of that almost like guise that was over dentistry where everyone was just crushing it?
100%. I think people are afraid to show that vulnerability, especially when I first started in the industry. It was, no offense to men, it was a very male-dominated industry. So you couldn't show a weakness like that, because then the guy down the street might see that you had that weakness. So even when I was in sales, at one point I was a director of field sales for one dental company. I was a VP of sales for another one, I won't name any companies, but they'd all act like, oh no, I'm golden. You know, I don't need whatever that service or that product is. I have this all figured out. And you could walk in the door and know they had nothing figured out. It's certainly not the thing you were there to help them with, but it was like, how do we crack through that? How do we get to the human side of this so we don't have this facade in front of it? And maybe you can actually succeed because you make yourself a little vulnerable.
Now, cracking through to the human side, is that something that you had a high emotional intelligence for simply because, like, why would you be comfortable with sales? That's not something that everybody is just naturally like, hey, I love sales. Let's do this. Where did that come from, Laura?
So I will tell you that my husband will regularly say that my wife is an incredibly good judge of character right off the bat. Like, we'll meet people and there'll be somebody and I'll think, you know, or somebody who I really like. And maybe other people in the group are, no, they're such and such. And 6 months out, what I said will prove true. Because it'll be just sort of I just get a vibe off people. I don't know what that is. I just always have. I've always been very drawn to people, drawn to their stories.
So like, the that's why you've been avoiding me. Now I understand. At shows, I start coming up to you're like...
I want to know what makes people tick. I want to understand why you do what you do. You know, like as a speaker, I'm constantly traveling. And when I get in my Lyft, I want to know the whole story. You know, like, so how long have you been in Atlanta? Is this your hometown? Why'd you come here? Blah, 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 blah. I'm just curious.
Well, so let's unpack that a little bit. In your childhood, can you trace anything back to where this either curiosity came from? Like, were you aware that you always had high emotional intelligence, or is that something that became more evident in your professional life?
So, interestingly, I was adopted from birth, and I knew that from very early on. My parents were great about, you know, as soon as you can randomly comprehend the edges of what adopted means, you're going to know. And until age 16, I was an only child. So I think with my parents, there is very much an awareness of my identity. You know, I never wondered where's my real parents or whatever we want to call them, but I knew. So I knew I was a little bit different than the rest of the people in my family. And also as an only child, I think you have to be a certain amount of introspective. You know, I grew up in New York City. And my family eventually moved out to Long Island, but you have to know how to entertain yourself. So I was always a reader. I was always drawing. I was always doing something creative. And as much as I love being around people, I do like that quiet time. I do like that introspection to sit back and process through and think through things.
You said, sorry, is the word, and then it just escaped me. You mentioned identity, and I think identity is fascinating because how it gets developed, how it gets shaped, these beliefs that we don't often challenge, and then all of a sudden they show up later in life, and it's like, why am I scared to do this? Or like, I have like a martyr complex for me, even though I was loved. It's so crazy, and yet you ended up having a strong sense of identity. And it's like, is it because of your circumstances? Because maybe such strong love in the home? What do you attribute that to?
Well, I will say I credit my parents with always being very honest and upfront. You know, I remember in middle school meeting two brother and sister who were adopted as well, but they carried it, especially this sister, like a chip on her shoulder. She was angry about it. Like, you know, it was a scar. I was adopted. And I was viewed as, well, I was adopted. You know, my biological mother was 17. And I totally got a better chance at life. You know, so I think the openness and the candor about that, it was a part of my identity, but it was never a scar. You know, I always took it as they got an extra step in life because this young woman or her family made this decision. And then my parents were who adopted me.
Wow, but even that, I see such a developed and cultivated optimism, where it's like you had two narratives in front of you and you chose mm-hmm. one that was going to empower you, one in which you could lean into that would be filled with gratitude. And I bet that's helped you with sales, because with sales, there's always two narratives.
It helped me with every single thing in my life. And I love that you use the word choice, because it is. Every single day you get up, you have a choice. You can't control the things that happen around you. I mean, you know, arguably small things in your home, but the world is well beyond our control. Every day we can choose how we react to it. And yes, I agree with you. And maybe Pollyanna of me, but I will typically choose, what's the positive way to see this? Or how can I grow from it or learn from it? So yeah, that definitely is a headset. And I can't say I know where that came from. I'll be honest with you. I wouldn't say either of my parents are those people.
Well, but
it's
that's
always
where,
been who I am.
That's where biology runs deep. So you also wonder, like, what strengths did you get from your biological parents that you're not really sure of? It's like, well, like, I don't know. What was my mom really bold and just kind of a go-getter? I guess you'll have to gaze in, although maybe that's where you could deduce. Like, if it's not the parents that nurtured me and the parents that gave me everything in which I saw modeling, well, maybe whatever's in me that's a tendency or trait probably did come from your parents. And that's, I don't know, I think that's a beautiful way of even getting to honor them by shining, even though, like you said, you've never met them. Is that correct?
I've never met them, but I do know who she is. I've seen photos of her. So I know exactly how I'm going to look as I'm older. Literally, I'm a clone. So that was kind of an interesting, I was like, okay, that's, you know, like you said, nature versus nurture. It's exactly who I look like. And in every photo, she always looks like she's having a good time. So she's always upbeat. So that is probably where that comes from.
So Laura, here you are, you're kind of coming along. Did you have, and there's a chance I missed this, did you get some professional sales experience prior to your introduction into dentistry?
I was working, as I said, as a retail buyer.
Okay.
So I think everyone has done some time in retail. That's how you heard of retail. Your time there. So I had that, but it wasn't the same relationship-based selling that happens once you get into sales in this industry. You know, people are coming in to buy a thing. But when you're going to a practice, even if what you're selling is a thing, you've got to develop that relationship. They've got to understand you, you've got to understand them to see if your thing solves their problems.
So what was your journey like the second you got into dentistry, eventually going to the place where here you are now, you founded Working Cat Media Marketing. I was going to say media, because it is probably a media company, but marketing.
It's very media.
What was that time frame like?
Wow. So my first job in a dental office was in September of 1993. So here we are, almost 31 years later. And I feel like I've done almost everything. I've worked in dental practices, never on the clinical end. I was never an assistant or anything like that. I've worked in dental sales. I've worked in leadership in both sales and marketing for various dental companies. I've been a dental speaker, still do that. And eventually I got to this place of founding Working Cat. And finding the whole finding Working Cat came from a very specific place. I had worked for three different companies in the space in a row that either had a change in leadership or some, again, life event happened that had massive layoffs. Mm. So three times in a row, my life got thrown sideways because of someone else's decisions. Mm. And I finally got to that place, enough. I know this industry. I know what I'm doing. I know enough people and I know how I can contribute. That if things go sideways, it's going to be because of the decisions that I make. And trust me, that's happened. But it wasn't going to be that someone else held the control anymore.
I was going to say, like, that's not just because that happens. A lot of people see the writing on the wall, a lot of people see that, like, I don't know, circumstances start, I don't know, becoming really uncomfortable or making it so that you can't get the life that you want. But it doesn't mean that they're ready to take that leap and trust themselves. Was that uncertainty, was that scary to grapple with?
And, you know, at the time I don't want to say I had even a safety net. My husband used to be a firefighter, and he had stopped being a firefighter. So we were kind of in this place. And I said to him, as scary as this is, the idea of security working for someone else has been vividly illustrated for me. It doesn't exist. You know, I mean, one of those companies was a very, very well-known financial institution. It starts with JPM. You know, so if that's not secure, what is? So it was a journey. I mean, like I said, I had a lot of contacts, a lot of people I knew in this industry with whom I created really good relationships. I had people I considered good friends. So I knew there was a referral network, if not a safety network. So it was just taking that leap. And even since then, what Working Cat does has evolved. Because I think when you first start a business, you have that mentality, I'm being everything to everyone. We all try that.
Yeah.
And it's a massive mistake. Because you can't. You just can't. And we've really kind of just kept niching down till we got to the core of what I really believe in and what I enjoy doing. And then, you know, people say, oh, do you do this, do that? Nope. Because we do what we're really good at and what we love.
But see, even right there, there's gold in that journey. You started out just like a light bulb, very broad, very open. We're gonna be a marketing company. We're gonna do what marketing companies do. And it's like the dentist that sets up the dental practice, and they're like, we're gonna do dentistry. And exactly. At some point, you start refining who you are, the way you see the world in dentistry, and what it is that aligns with your gifting and your passion. And all of that is forming your authentic brand. And it's something that I don't think dentists have a ton of clarity on. So I'm not sure if that's one of the offerings that you have, Laura, but if it's not, there is gold in that journey of yours, even going from this is what we are, all things to all people, to very intentional and strategic differentiation of this is what we are and this is what we're not. And if you want exactly. These other things, we can point you in the right direction, but this is who we work for. This is what we believe in. This is what we stand for. That's amazing.
And honestly, Sean, it's a big part of the conversation on a regular basis, because people ask me, well, will you do the social media and do this? And I'm like, you know what? We used to, but it's not what we're great at. We were good at it, but we were never great at it. I know somebody who's great at it, if you want to work with them, but we're great at this. And if a company is telling you they're great at all of it, there's some hills you should run for. Because they're probably not.
Well, so I get the sense that you, being in dentistry for 31 years, with all the different talents and skills you have, probably had some moments where you're like, well, I could do this, or I can bring value here, or I can bring value here, and probably trying to rein that in and go, you know what, marketing. And then within marketing, what's the transformation I could bring a practice? I'm sure that has been such an evolution. And I think a lot of dentists end up having that same exact question. Because even between the lines of what we're saying, I know the listeners, my whole goal, Laura, for this podcast is always what dreams, what passions are inside of the listener that they're not necessarily pursuing right now. And yet it's that thing that just keeps coming up, and maybe they keep saying someday. They keep kicking it down the road to say, you know, I'm not ready yet. Or what if I try and look foolish? And my whole thing is you're never going to be fulfilled living on the sideline. And you never even get clarity in the sideline. It's in motion that things start becoming clearer. Doors close, other doors open. Man, with 31 years of experience, I'm sure you have such a great pulse on what's happening in dentistry. And again, because of that, you probably saw all these different ways you could help. How did you arrive at this singular, I guess, the area of value that you bring right now, that mountain that you're sitting on top of? How did you arrive at that one?
So I think it came down to, and I'll reiterate your point about, I could have done this, I could have done that. And yes, there were a lot of things. I mean, I said I'm a linguist by education. I could do copywriting on websites. I could do, you know, whatever. But that wasn't a pain point I was seeing. One of the biggest pain points I was seeing is every time you talk to a dentist or practice about, well, what are your goals? You know, they've got their 10 goals for the year, their production goal, their collection goal. Their new patient goal was the big one. And they always had some number that, with all love, they pulled out of their butt usually. You know, it wasn't like, it hadn't been backwards engineered from a target or anything like that. It was just, I want 200 new patients. And I would always ask them, okay, well, when do you count that new patient? Like, when do you tick that box for that new patient? Oh, and they come in for that first visit. And I would just say, you see, that's a blind date. And they're checking you out and they're deciding if they like you. And maybe they didn't get enough information about you before they came in. Well, they got information that didn't really reflect you, didn't tell your real story. So they came in for that blind date and you were 6 inches shorter and 10 years older than your profile said. And so they didn't come back. So to me, I don't count a new patient till the second appointment, because that says, I liked you. You were what you said you were. Now we can go study.
Okay.
And doctors would want 200 new patients, but 100 go out the back door because they didn't match.
So I knew I liked you, Laura, but now I know why. Because I remember when we first connected, you were saying things like this, and I totally forgot about it leading up to this interview. To me, there's something very common sense, because of all of my marketing background, about you attract the people that are going to be a fit and that there's alignment. So that's why your marketing message is so important. But the tragedy is, in dentistry, you have some Whole Foods dental practices that are attracting Walmart clients, and you wonder why 100%. There's not any resonance. If anything, there's the opposite. There's this dissonance, and they can't tell why. And what's obvious to me, because of what I've understood about marketing and business and branding, is not obvious to dental practices. And that's why your message of saying this, and I love the fact that you use relationships as the metaphor. Because even that, so much of what I'm doing with Zana is all about that. How do you actually achieve kind of intimacy at scale with patients? Now, that might sound weird. I don't mean anything strange by that. It's just that human to human, at the core of it, if it comes down to you feel like you belong in my practice because of connection, because of being seen, because of feeling some sense of, just human to human, I'm liked, I'm enjoyed. Well, how do we achieve that when we can't go to coffee with all of our patients? When we can't actually, maybe we could write like a letter, a really quick one to every new patient just as a thank you. But to really build a relationship, it requires time and some sense of revealing who you are. And the more you reveal who you are, the more they can get that sense that they know who you are. And I feel like so much of that can be effectively done through marketing, through branding, through crafting the right narrative. Now, tell me if I'm wrong, but isn't that kind of what you do for practices?
100%. And we talked earlier about making a snap decision about someone. And there are various studies, people who are way smarter than me, who talk about how long it takes to form a first impression. And most people are like, oh, 3 seconds, 10 seconds, couple of minutes. It's like milliseconds. When we see an image, we make snap decisions. So what drives me crazy is if I end on somebody's website and it's filled with stock photography and educational or gory videos, I call them juicy pics, like when your lips are attractive and that whole thing. And it's like, no one wants to see that. No patient wants to see that. They don't want to be reminded that they're going to the dentist, even though that's where they're going. What I want people to see is who the practice really is. The practitioner, the team, and not, you know, I went to the University of Pennsylvania and I belong to this association. Those are great. Those are great. And they should be on your website and probably hang on your wall. But I want to know, why do you do this? Why do you love this? How am I going to feel as a patient when I come to your practice? And I want to hear it from more than you, Doc. So I want really solid patient testimonials where we sit them down and get them to tell their story about how their life was changed by that practice. And whether it's high-end technology, that's what the practice is all about, whether it's incredible warmth and feeling like they're part of a family, whatever that thing is that sets your practice apart is the story we want to tell. Because as a patient, I can make that decision of this is my vibe or this isn't my vibe. But it has to be a real vibe. You know, in recent years, that conversation about authenticity has become, you know, it's the biggest buzzword. You have to be authentic on social media, be authentic everywhere. It's virtually impossible to be authentic on camera. I mean, you know, most people, as soon as you turn the camera on in front of them, they freak out. But we spend a lot of time, once we do turn that camera on, talking about things that have nothing to do with what we're there for today. I ask them, you know, what did you do Sunday? You know, who are you when you're not a dentist? You know, did you go spelunking? Great. Let's talk about spelunking because people want to know that. And I think that helps people make that decision when they find their practice, that that's a practice they want to be in because they've heard who those practitioners are as humans. It's all comes back to the human connection.
Well, I love the way in which you can break people open on camera because I agree 100%. Every now and then people remark about how I show up on camera and I'm like, I've been doing this for like 7 years. Maybe even longer. I look at some of my early videos 10 years ago when I was trying to record and I can barely watch them, Laura, because it would just be me trying the first 5 seconds. Like, hey, this is Sean from, and then I would just feel so weird and then no one would be there. And if someone was, I couldn't even record if someone was in the room. So someone that's not used to it, the second they're on camera, you're right. Like all this pretense and performance and anxiety comes up. So for you to be able to get them to just start talking about things they care about, things that are real. You show up so natural, not just on camera, but when you're on stage. And I remember before my first time on stage, I got like a speaking coach. And he's like, and this is Paul Homley. I'm sure like he's famous in dentistry. And I'm really, really struggling. And he's like, Sean, just tell me a story. And I'm thinking it has to be like a business story or it has to connect. And he's like, just tell me about a road trip. Like just anything. Just start talking about something from your childhood, about something that's real, and get past all the nuance that you think you need to do. And he just broke me open. And I'll never forget how important that was for me. Just as a lesson learned. So the fact that you're able to do that, it's like having a nice camera, having nice equipment, capturing a video and putting it on someone's website isn't enough if the person that's on camera isn't there, isn't connecting, isn't centered. So you, man, Laura, like that's just the wisdom to do that, the skill in being able to do that. When I know even narrative and story has been kind of like something that's been an emergent topic over the last 5-10 years. Where do you feel like you intersected with that in your journey?
So I think for us, it was seeing so many of these, my name is Dr. Jones, I'm here, I've been practicing for this long, I went to this school, and understanding that I didn't know anything more about them after watching that than I did before. But in my years in sales, I go into practices and start talking about life. I remember I was a sales leader at a Dell company, and I was working with one of my reps out in Southern California. And he was a big orthodontic practice. And we walked in, and there were these flags going all around this sort of round central thing he had in his practice. And I immediately recognized them. And I was like, do you go to the races in Siena? Because there's this crazy horse race twice a year in Siena around the square. It's like a great way for people to get killed if you've never seen it. But every one of the former like families of Siena has this flag and they race in this. And it's a big deal there. And he had all those flags out. And the person he was when we walked in and he said, oh, hi, you know, blah, blah, blah. And who he was when he started telling me about being there for those races was a polar opposite human. His voice changed. He went from this to, oh, I know it's for this. You know, even the pitch of his voice changed. So knowing that you can get somebody to a place where they talk about something that gets them excited, that gets to their real why, not, you know, my dad was a dentist and it seemed easy. That's where they're going to connect with people. And that's what patients are going to want to hear. That's who they're going to know. You're the practice I want to date from.
But that's just so powerful because it's so counterintuitive. Like, it makes sense as we're growing up that we learn by modeling. We have heroes, mm-hmm. we have people we look up to. And often when dentists get into dentistry, they see the person on the stage 25 years ahead of them, teaching clinically, is an expert. And whether they're aware of it or not, they're like, that's what a successful dentist looks like. And they form their own story about the role they have to play, and how they need to show up. And I think the most liberating thing you can do is say, you know what? You can show up on your terms, completely the way you are, and your patients actually want that. Your patients are actually craving to just know the doctor in the chair is just who they are. Like, it's who they say they are. It's how they show up. It's who they're resting in. They're not trying to be contrived or fake it. This is just who they are. And then I feel like who you naturally attract and retain in that dating sense, yeah. it's someone that likes you for you. And I remember early on, I was so bent on like getting married. I went to college, like, I'm going to get married. Like this, you can get an education anywhere, but I need to find a wife and a good one. And I just remember one of the things that I kept realizing was like, my brother was so, he was a beautiful man, super handsome, still is, but I'm just saying, definitely then, was a model. And he was so slick that at times I remember being like, Michael, it's almost like you're Bill Gates, not aesthetically, but just with like, you're with the money, you're what everyone would want. But if you show up at your best performing and being slick, you don't know if someone's really falling in love with you or like the image of you and what you portray. So I always remember like, not to downplay who I was, but I was like, man, if I can, when I'm dating, have a woman find or see me and see my heart and fall in love with that, I know I'll never have to perform a day in my life. And I think there's something similar with dentistry. It's like, if you can just, and it takes courage to own who you are and own your story. And I feel like based off of your giftings and skill sets, Laura, I bet you and your team have a canny way, an uncanny way, sorry, of being able to unlock that in the practices you serve. So when someone's coming to you and they're like, hey, I want to work with Working Cat Marketing, how can you tell whether someone's a really great fit or whether someone maybe isn't ideal for you guys?
So I think if someone comes to us and, you know, I always, as the kids say, I creep on them online before we actually speak. So I check out their website and their social medias and all that. And if I see that performance, like you talked about with your brother, we know we're probably not going to be a fit because they've had a packaged image that they've decided to put out there. And it can be very hard to break someone out of that because chances are they were coached to that. Mm. Like they learned how to put together that slick package. But if I see someone who I can just tell they're more of a person than they're telling me, you know, they're doing the I graduated from stuff, but they've got 500 five-star reviews. Something great is happening in that practice. They just haven't really told anybody about it yet. Or haven't figured out how to tell that story yet. So that's someone we know we can truly elevate because they're doing the good work. They just don't know how to tell the world about it.
So what's your basic like transformation? Like people come to you and after working with you or while working with you, they achieve this. Like what's the main deliverable?
My single biggest goal is patient retention. Yes, I want you to attract new patients, but I want you to attract the right patients, the ones who want to stay. So we expect to see an increase in new patients, but most importantly, we expect to see less going out the back door. We want those new patients to actually stay because they understood you before they came in.
I feel like that's where the equity is in the practice anyway. It's patients that are loyal, that feel like they belong, that are connected, that aren't going to fall prey to the commoditization of dentistry where lowest price wins and some new patient special is going to all of a sudden break loyalty. Because when you feel like you belong and you feel like you're connected to people in a practice, that's a strong bond rather than it's a service, it's interchangeable. Ooh, I can get it done somewhere cheaper. I'm gone. Like, yeah. You don't want to play that game.
And it's a big part of the reason that we typically only work with private practice because, and no disrespect to DSOs, they're doing great work and they're most of the industry at this point or will be very soon. I don't necessarily know I'm going to see the same dentist next year or the same hygienist in 6 months because they're employees. So when we're in to tell a story, it's probably going to be a private practice or at the most a small group practice, where they maybe own two or three businesses, because those are the folks who patients are going to see when they show up in the practice. And that's whose story we want to be able to tell. I will tell you that there's a metric I wish dental consultants would get rid of, and it's that new patient count. Hmm. Unless you tell them, they have to count on visit two. Because they're so fixated on that number, it's everything else.
Laura, you just have so much strength about you as a person. Like, and I feel like what you had said earlier makes so much sense of like you walk in identity, not in some bold or brash way, but just in a really humble but strong way. Like you're very aligned. And here you are, you're leading a company and you're doing such an amazing job. What do you feel like have been some of the keys in your journey that have helped you to continue to keep going instead of when you had decision points, instead of bowing out or instead of, talking yourself out of that leap, you decided to bet on yourself. What were some of either the mindsets you feel like were important that you needed to adopt or maybe some that you needed to shed that weren't serving you anymore?
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about mindset earlier. I always make that choice to find the positive. But I will say that pruning is a big part of life, in business and in life, I think. And sometimes you have to jettison things or even people who drag that down, who, you know, they're energy givers and they're energy takers. And I hope to always give energy. I know sometimes I take, my husband will tell you I take, but I always hope to give. And I think sometimes you have to look at a thing, like for a long time, we tried to coach people with social media and all that. And I just felt like it stole my energy and I just had to prune that and say, no, it's not. And I don't think it's serving practice. I don't think your average dental practice is attracting and retaining new patients because they post that it's Taco Tuesday. That's just not happening for them. So that's a lot of it for me. I have this little thing on my desk. I'm actually looking at it right now. It says, it always seems impossible until it's done. And I think the reason it's there is because whenever I'm like about a thing, I'm like, no, you'll get there. You've done 100 other things where you thought, I can't do this. And you did. So maybe you'll fall down, but you'll have those 99 other things that you did.
So, Laura, as a follow-up, can you tell me about a time when you experienced a strong negative emotion in business where either you were very scared or very discouraged? Because I, again, for the listeners, I think part of what stops people from stepping up and stepping out is because the fear of what if is somehow bigger than the fear of why not? like meaning like, I am actually more terrified by the fact that I may not shine as bright as I can over the next decade. And there's a chance that I'm leaving all this impact on the table of people that need to hear what I have to say. And I'm terrified that if I don't occupy that space, there's not going to be that synergy where it can bless someone else and help someone else get set free. And I don't want to live with that regret of, Sean, you could have been crazier, wilder. Why play it safe? And yet we play it safe because we somehow think that there's safety. We think there's safety if we work with a big company that has this guarantee that, Laura, you just keep your head down, you keep working hard, and everything's going to be okay. Until it wasn't. And the illusion is, or the reality is, there is no safety, whether you're on the sideline or you're in the game. So you might as well live bold. But can you think of a moment for you when there was a turning point and you could have decided, again, I'm just going to play it safe, but you didn't?
Yeah. So I think one of the ugliest emotions is envy. It serves no one. And yet I have in my career, even since I started this business, been in that place of envy. Because I know people in the space who did all the marketing, you know, did all the parts or did specific parts that we no longer do. And, you know, you're on Instagram doom scrolling and I'd see they're speaking at this event and that event and they're doing this. And I'd get this, I must suck because they're getting all of this and I'm not. And what am I doing wrong? Or what am I not doing enough of? And I think that was really the turning point that made us look at it and say, okay, let's stop trying to be everything. Because we're not succeeding at it. You know, yeah, there's revenue coming in and whatnot, but I'd still be on Instagram with a little green monster on my shoulder going, well, look, she's speaking at that thing and I'm not, or that company's got this gig and they're partnered with these people and I'm not. And now, because we're so specific, people reach out to us. Because they know, oh, you do that thing really well. But it took a lot because, like I said, I think envy is really ugly and I definitely harbored it for quite some time until I said, this is damaging. You know, it's not their fault they're successful. You know, they're doing all the right things, but it's my fault that I'm sitting here being envious of their success instead of figuring out, how do I be that successful, but maybe in a smaller or a more specific arena? Not necessarily smaller, but definitely more specific. So that was, for me, a big turning point to get past the green.
Well, A, thank you so much for sharing that, because it takes so much courage just to show up and be like, look, I'm a human, and I've also faced anything that's common to man when it comes to being angry, being jealous, having envy, imposter syndrome, wanting to give up. everything. Like, you know, for me, I feel like I've been that sailboat that's been in the harbor that keeps dreaming of the ocean and where it could go. And then I'm like, I'll lift I'll lift anchor tomorrow. And then the next day I'm dreaming. And then I'm like, I'll lift anchor tomorrow. And years of tomorrow can make tomorrow never come. And at some point you just have to trust. And I think part of also what I was hearing through you saying that is like, there's really a peace that comes from trusting your path, your strengths, and going on the long game of saying, you know what, this is what I'm committing to. I'm committing to this niche. I'm committing to this way of giving value. And I'm going to continue to do that. And even if I don't shoot up and get recognized in the next week or the next month, it's not going to stop me from running my race. And that is incredibly profound. And it's also very liberating to get to that place. And that's exactly what I see you doing.
Yeah, it has been liberating because I did feel like we chased a lot of business that really wasn't the right business for us. And now we have that opportunity to be more selective. You know, like I said, to look at somebody's website and say, oh, that's already packaged, so we're not going to do that one. And I think when you do something really, really specific, word gets out. You know, and people start calling up and saying, so-and-so said I needed to talk to you. Okay, great. That wasn't happening before.
Okay, so I'm a dentist and I'm listening right now and I'm like, okay, Laura, it sounds like she does some amazing things in dentistry. Am I a good fit for her? What do you say? Like, what's your message right now to say, like, if you wanted eyeballs on what you're doing, A, where do they go? But why would they go there?
Okay, so they can come to workingcat.pro to learn about all the different things we do there. We specifically focus on what's your story, what's your message. So if you don't already have a solid brand identity, understanding that a brand is more than just your logo, we do brand development and brand design, which includes the logo. And then what we really lean into is the photography and video that effectively tell your story so that you can attract the right patients. I want your website to be filled with pictures of you, your team, your pictures, not the shiny, happy people that are stuck.
I love that, not only because you communicated it so well, but because the future is so visual. Great photography, great videography. It's no longer an option. It's almost like the baseline. Like 15 years ago, you could have a website, people would find you. Having a website was enough. There's been a lot of evolution since then, but now it's like almost like baseline is to start playing the game well, you need to have great visuals that actually back up your brand and what you stand for so you can start attracting those patients that are going to naturally fit, belong, and resonate so you can have those patients for life and get off that rat race of feeling like you just need to keep getting new patients and getting new patients and getting new patients. There's not fulfillment in that.
The ADA has for years said that the ideal patient, the average dental practice, is a woman between 35 and 45 years old. Because 80% of dental appointments are made by a woman. It might not be for her, might be for her husband, kids, whatever, but she makes the appointments. She's probably making the decision on where they go. And for a long time, the dental industry, particularly dentists who've been around for a number of years, ignored millennials who are exactly now 35 to 45 years old. So your ideal patient is a millennial and younger. You know, we're starting to get into the Gen Ys who are making those decisions, and they expect you to show up. You authentically you, not stock photos or stock educational videos. And as that becomes more and more the norm, if you're not keeping up with that, if you're not presenting that, you're just going to skip right past you. No. And they're your target audience. You know, whether you're ready to accept that, they're the age bracket you want.
Okay, Laura, I think you're ready for this. So here it is. You're walking down the street and off in the distance, you see 18-year-old Laura. And the idea is you just have a moment to communicate one sentiment to her that you believe is going to help her in her journey. What do you share with her?
Well, you're good enough. You're good enough. Also, you're thin now. Enjoy this. But yeah, you're good enough. Because she doubted that a lot along the way.
You know, and I feel like that's the message again to the listeners. Not just like, hey, you're good enough, but like you're ready. And whatever idea you have, it's enough preparation. It's enough waiting. It's enough stalling. Because my fundamental belief, Laura, is that we're all in this line advancing dentistry. But as I look to the left and the right, I still see vacancies where I know there's people that are on the sideline. And I'm not threatened by them occupying their space. I know when they occupy their space, then there's a chance for there to be synergy. There's a chance for me to meet them at a meeting. And all of a sudden, we, through a conversation, unlock something. And now dentistry wins because someone is shining bright and making a difference that only they can make. You're not competing with all the other marketing companies because you're doing something that you are great at, that your team is great at, and is very distinctive and different. And I absolutely love that. I love the way you're leading. Laura, it's super easy to honor you as someone that is pioneering positive change. Thank you so much for letting me interview you today.
Oh, I appreciate it. You are a phenomenal interviewer. You ask wonderful questions and you give I've listened to so many of your podcasts. Give everyone the room to be who they are. And that's the whole point. Tell your authentic story.
Well, thank you, Laura. So if someone wants to reach you, where's the best place for them to find you?
Go to workingcat.pro, click on contact us, and send me a love note.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Laura.
Truly my pleasure.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to follow so you never miss an episode. To learn more about what's going on in dentistry, check out innovationindentistry.com.